Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
There's nothing left to do. No injections, no surgery. You got to get this thing replaced, man. So I went home with that information and I made the decision. I want to go out on my terms. I want to go out how I want to go out. Juice, my career was supposed to be over at year three. Done. I didn't allow it. Mentally, I didn't allow it. Like, physically, I could have just walked away and workers comp this thing. That wasn't it for me. That wasn't the end of my story.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank, presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. Seth Levitt and the man with the best hands in the podcast business. He is OJ McDuffie. Juice. It's just one podcaster to another today, isn't it?
That's right, man. This is this family right here, Big Seth. You know what I mean? And the same type of steps that we both took. Well, he and I took, not you.
No.
Kind of from the field to the podcast booth.
You know what I mean? I was on the field. I was just outside.
You were on the field, but yeah, you were in a suit. You were suited and booted on the field.
I was back in those
days. And Big Seth, as you always know, man, the right side of the football too, man. That's what I'm talking about. Even though it was the left side.
Right. The right side, but the left side. Well, if you're hearing that voice and you're a Dolphins fan, you know who that voice belongs to. Very excited to have podcaster extraordinaire and a guy who was a really damn good football player as well, Teron Armstead, diving into the Fish Tank for the first time. T-Stead, appreciate you, man.
Of course. How you guys doing?
Man, good. Couldn't man. We're good, bro. Just excited about this episode right here, of course, man. And, you know, we've got so much we want to talk to you about. You know, of course, you know, you had a 12-year NFL career as, you know, one of the top players at your position. But I think there's other way to start the show, Big Seth. And I, you know, other than discuss, like, his game as a football player, we talked about it a little bit already, but he's in our world now as a podcaster.
Indeed.
So, T-Stead, tell us about the set. Your podcast, which is absolutely killing it right now with a star-studded line of guests and great analysis as well. Talk about the set, bro.
I appreciate it, Juice. Appreciate it, man. It's been fun. It's been great to get the show started. The idea of the set came, well, before I even had a name, but the idea of getting into the media side of the game came at the very, very end of my career and decided to go into it. And like anything else, you know, Jules, when you put some type of effort into it, the way we do it, we go all in.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to go full investment into it, give the time, effort, and energy that's necessary to be consistent and be like a real space. I'm not here to go viral or to do any like clip moments or anything like that. It's just fair, honest analysis, critiquing the game, giving my criticism, thoughts, and opinions. So the set, we're live on YouTube every Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And every Thursday, we drop an episode with a player, a coach, someone around the space, around the game. It's been great.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah, man. We got to make sure we tune in, Big Seth, because we do our live Wednesday night show.
Right.
So there's no conflict here. We can actually get on this Monday night show and check him out and maybe steal some ideas, Big Seth. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And, you know, when we were scheduling our live, I'm like, we're going to stay out of the way of the big fella.
Damn right we are.
We're going to stay on the outside.
Anytime, fellas. Pull up anytime, any Monday.
Yeah. It looks like a lot of fun. You're doing some great stuff. And as I said in that tweet, the guest list, especially the last few weeks from a Dolphins perspective, has been really, really strong. Yes. But as the old washed up PR guy in the group here, I want to hear more about your transition from player to media member, basically, or content creator, if you will, because it seems like it was made relatively quickly, as you just explained. But it was also, at least from the outside looking in, it seems like it's gone really smooth, man. And maybe that's just you. Maybe that's just how you roll. But a lot of guys, so I want to hear about that. But I also want to ask you about the fact that a lot of guys who make that transition, they either jump on with an outlet like an ESPN or a local radio station, or if they launch their own podcast, they have a co-host. They have one, two, a group of guys, and there's some really good stuff out there. You chose to ride solo, and I don't feel like we see that as frequently. I would love to know not only about the transition, but also what went into you making that decision to go as a solo rider.
Man, it honestly wasn't master planned out, so I didn't have a list of potential candidates to co-host with. I didn't have like a full drawn out plan of how we were going to execute the show. It's more so been trial and error. And just going after it and going about it. I'm doing the work. You know what I mean? I don't want to be a guy that's just up there talking. I watch the games. I go back and look at film before I give analysis. Like, so I didn't expect it to be this tough. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm sure you guys know too, man. It's the podcast and media space. If you want to be good at it, it's a lot of work that goes into it. So
yeah.
I retired from the NFL after a 12-year career and all the hours that goes into that, and I transition to media. And like I say, ignorance talking, I'm thinking it's going to be easy. I just, the camera, just talk. Yeah.
That's all those guys do, right? They just talk.
Not even close. So I got a deep appreciation for media and everything that the media members do. So what you see on the outside might look seamless. It's been a grind. It's been a lot of trial and error. A lot of mistakes has been made that we try to correct and learn from. At some point, I think I'll have a co-host, but the way that the show is going and growing organically, I'm not forcing anything. I don't have no one to tell me what to say, how to say it, and all these other things like the bigger platforms.
What do we say, Juice?
Yeah. It's your fucking hey, do what the fuck you want to do.
Do what the fuck you want to do, man.
Yeah, I'm rocking with that. Rocking with that for sure.
Yeah.
You know what? Hold up, Big Seth, before you move on. Who the hell's gonna tell T Stan what to do anyways?
Well,
man?
I don't know.
He's trying to kid Big Seth. He ain't kidding. They would have to write a really big check. That's a fact.
No doubt. So a couple things on that, and I love hearing it. Number one, when a guy tells me it's a grind, then I respect it, because if somebody's telling me it's easy, that means they're just telling me someone else is doing all the work. And they're just showing up, you know, when it's time to show up, because it is.
Are you talking about me behind my partner like that, man?
Can you talk behind someone's back and
in
to
front
their
of
face?
Their face? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe
I'm right here,
Riverside.
Big Seth. I'm right here.
I wasn't talking about, but they say hit dog and a holler. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, though, like Travis Wingfield is our guy. We love Travis. Mm-hmm. I know you did stuff with Travis. And he does a solo show. And Juice and I are like, yo, that's a different animal, man. The fact that you can do that solo show and be entertaining and talk to, in theory, kind of nobody for a period of time. The interviews and those things, the preparation is the challenge, and the work and booking the guests, as you know, is brutal, because clearly you are flexing all your relationships. So that is not, and then they change on you, they change times, they change availability, and all that stuff is not easy.
They change phone numbers.
The phone number thing is a whole other thing. They tell you yes, and then they ghost, all that stuff. But to sit there and do a show and be entertaining for a period of time without anybody but you and that microphone, I got a lot of respect for it. So I just wanted to go ahead and say that. I do have this question, though. you last year were also still mentoring players on that Dolphins team. You were in training camp. You were showing up and helping guys on the field, helping guys showing, you know, I love the way you have just been kind of a big bro to guys and how to navigate life as a professional player, all that stuff. But then you're also doing this show. And there were a couple moments, man, where some things popped off. There was like that fight in camp or whatever, or you know, friendly fire. And then you're reporting on it. And I said to Juice, ooh, I don't know. As a former PR guy, like, you know, we would support our guys. But wait a minute, if you're in the inner sanctum, and that, how have you juggled that? Have you had any pushback? Has that been a learning experience for you?
Great question, Seth. Great question.
You. Yeah.
It has been. It's been a learning experience for sure. For me, again, like I say, I'm never intending to go viral. So if I talk on a topic or a subject, I'm able to communicate or offer up my perspective in a way that's still protective to the people that I'm talking about. So
yeah.
A camp fight or almost fight, to me, that's nothing. So if we talk about and also it's 400 other cameras out there, people on their regular phone. So it's not like it happened in the practice facility where nobody is. This is
right.
A public.
They didn't know there was a fight. Yeah.
It's a public open practice. So everyone out there heard whatever. So just offer up that, you know, give my take on it. I didn't have any real issues. Talk to the Dolphins about it or whatever. And as you see, I could still report and share my thoughts and opinions on what I mean. They not to big dog anybody, but they can't tell me what I can and can't say. You know what I mean? Even though I'm always trying to protect the team anyway. It's still been a learning experience. Some of those relationships are delicate and you gotta treat it as such because it is fragile. I don't want to say anything to ruin the relationship or tarnish the relationship, but it is different, man. It is different. Some sensitivity that you got to be aware of that you didn't necessarily know existed as a player. Being on the other side of it, some people take words or an opinion or a thought or how you pose the question as, you know, may take offense to it. So it's a learning experience.
Yeah. And T-Stan, I'm going to tell you, man, the tough transition for me was going from a former player to a guy that's doing podcasts or media. And they think that, you know, we're going to, you know, go in there and hear something and go back and report it. We still got that locker room sanctity about everything, man. What happens in the locker room stays in the locker room, man. So that was a tough transition for me because, you know, now I'm treated more like media instead of one of the top 50 players in Dolphin history, man. And it drives me crazy, bro. It really does, man. But that thin line we cross, we'll never cross the line of showing up the team or giving some inside information that we shouldn't be putting out there, you know, because we love the team too much still.
Yep, no question. It's interesting you say that because you cross that line and you get treated as such. And me and you both, Juice, we've been in a facility, been in a locker room for a long time. We know and have seen things that would instantly go like if we wanted to go there, but that's not why we do it.
No,
that's not why we do it.
You'll do that 25 years down the road, T-Stead, when you're talking about, well, you know, I never talked about what I played, but 25 years ago, you know, this happened in the locker room, you know, and that's how a lot of times the stories get spread around, man. Okay, so, all right, so let's go back to 2022, T-Stead. You're the prize free agent guy of that class, you know, as we all know, and I need to know how and why you chose Miami, and then once you did, you proceeded to win over every single Dolphin across the world by showing up to your contract signing in a number 13 Dan Marino jersey. At what point did you decide that was the right fit for this big moment?
Instantly, when I knew I was signing to Miami, I had my people go, I need a Dan jersey. And we're in Dallas. I'm in Dallas. So it honestly wasn't that easy to find. It's all these Cowboys jerseys, and I'm not wearing that. So we tracked down a Dan Marino jersey, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is perfect. Perfect. It's just I wanted to show homage, give respect. I had met Dan on my visit because I didn't even know Dan was on the staff. Right. So when I went to visit and I talked to Mike McDaniel, talked to Chris Greer, and Frank Smith, and all those guys, I'm like, man, Dan Marino, he got an office? He's here? Like, yeah. Oh, man. So when I flew back home before I signed, I'm like, yeah, I need the Dan jersey. When I sign his contract, I know how I'm stepping.
Yeah, you know, and Danny's he's a great guy too, man. He's so chill, man. And you know, what was your like perception of him before you got a chance to like meet him face-to-face, because a lot of people, though, they think Dan is some, I don't know what they think about Dan, but when you get to meet him, get to know him, man, that's a chill dude, right, bro?
For sure. The most chill, most humble legend, the most humble superstar Hall of Famer that you ever come across, man. He's just a normal guy. As you know, Juice, you guys played together for a very long time and broke records and all these amazing things, but Dan is just a guy. He's just a normal person, man. I really, really adore and admire that man, how he goes about his business, how optimistic he is with everyone in the building. He always trying to look to push and encourage. He's never a downer, always looking to push the Dolphins forward, keep everyone on a positive note and mindset. He's still a leader. He don't even say much. Right. But he still leads with his energy and his optimism all the time.
Now, real quick, T-Stead, you guys have a Dan Marino type in New Orleans when you were there? Like somebody's in the building that's one of those legends?
No, I can't say we had anybody of like his stature, and I had his level career. And Sean Payton was a chains on the door guy. It wasn't really, he didn't really let, like many visitors didn't come through right. The facility often. You know what I mean? If they did,
he was Joe Clark. He was Joe Clark up in there.
He was Joe Clark, low key. He was Joe Clark, low key. It'll be rare would he have someone that'll come through the facility. And if they did, they'd go right into the team meeting room. He didn't really mess around with like visitors and all that. Right. Nah, he didn't play that. Right.
Good stuff. So, your first year with the Fins, right? It was a decent football team. It was a team that showed promise. Of course, we had the Tua concussions, the number of which is still debatable, but that's not what we're here for. The team does make it to the playoffs. You guys give Buffalo all that they could handle with Skylar Thompson under center, ultimately comes up short. And then 2023 rolls around, and this team, it looks like world beaters, man. Like Mike McDaniel is reinventing offense. Literally, there are teams around the league like going, what is that? We want to steal that. The 70 burger that you drop on your former coach. Speaking of the man who's locked up the doors, right? Best end zone setlies in the league. Hard Knocks is like, we need to get down to Miami. All of those things are happening. Tua's healthy the whole year. And the league's like in the palm of your hands, Teron. And then to the Tennessee flipping Titans game happens, and it was almost like in an instant the league like figured out McDaniel's offense and things caught up to him. It seemed as if from the outside looking in, and almost like they were looking for answers ever since throughout the remainder of his tenure here. What, in your estimation, you had a front row seat, you participated in all of that. Juice and I are just trying to figure it out from the outside looking in. What, in your estimation, happened in that moment?
Man, that 23 season came down to health. Honestly, it just came down to health, man. We lost probably 14 of the 22 starters. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, that's tough. It's tough. It don't really matter the scheme. It don't really matter the schematics of everything. When you really just down, and we started to roll guys in, signing guys off the street, and they're starting the next day, the next game. That 23 season came down to health, and we hit a wall. Which we had done throughout the season, even when we were rolling. We had our moments, stretches, where we didn't move the ball well, we couldn't score well, but we also had Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, and those other guys that's creating turnover, Van Ginkle, running back, interceptions. Right. Like, so the moments that we struggled offensively, our defense was exceptional. And not just getting the ball back, but creating points. So you get down later in the season, you're playing really good teams, and you don't have that anymore. You don't have that security blanket. Your offense is not going to score every time they touch the ball. And as we had those moments, our defense that's depleted, honestly, through injury, we're not able to get those extra possessions. We're not able. And sort of the rhythm of it just kind of came to a halt. 24 was a different story, different team, brand new team. That's a different identity than 23. I think 23, we had something special. We had a chance to do something.
What if going bankrupt was the best thing that happened to you? Whether it's your wages being garnished, car repossessed, house foreclosed, or you're suffocating with debt, a good bankruptcy attorney can give you peace of mind that you need and deserve. My name is Chad Van Horn from Van Horn Law Group, and I've personally seen people thrive after filing for bankruptcy. The shame of bankruptcy is just a ploy to keep you in debt forever. There is no shame to work with Van Horn Law Group to get rid of your debt for good. If you're ready to get your life back, call us today. Se habla Español.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. Injuries always play such a big part, and people don't say that. I remember one time the Denver Broncos came down there, big Seth, for the Super Bowl, and they had nobody on their injury report. You know what I mean? That's living life right.
It's almost
there,
like, how's that possible?
Right there.
Yeah, somebody's looking out for you.
Especially when all your number ones are out there, man. Like Teron said, they had some guys come off the street, man. You know, Teron, Big Seth just brought up Mike McDaniel. You know, we had Mike on the show his first year here, and he was cool as hell, man. Seems like a great guy. But here's the thing, T-Stead. I played for Joe Paterno, Don Shula, and Jimmy Johnson in my career. Three Hall of Fame coaches, but also, I didn't mean to like gloss. I wasn't trying to talk about me. So I thought, like I said, it's your show. You know what I mean? It's your show. That's why I went through
we'll
that.
We'll get
like,
there.
Like
we're
pass.
Working our way into it, Juice.
Yeah. Wow. But they're also all three guys that coach really hard, you know, and were the unquestionable judge, jury, and executioner, you know, of their prospective teams. You played, like you said, for Sean Payton, you know, another coach with a, you know, a tough guy reputation who may also find himself in the Hall of Fame one day. I guarantee he probably will at some point. And probably, you know, he's probably come from the same cloth as my guy, man. Sure. Then you get Miami Mike. Now, we're not here to put you in an awkward position here. That's not what we do. But how different was McDaniel from Payton with respect to leading a group of alpha males, man? And how fair is the narrative that discipline was an issue with this team under Mike?
Different. Definitely different, man. They were definitely different. I would maybe even say polar opposites as far as head coach approach and being that disciplinarian or style of discipline. It's different. As far as coaching football, offensively, two geniuses, two brilliant minds, two guys that know how to create matchups and mismatches, know how to find space in a defense, can predict what the defense is going to do to try to stop X, Y, and Z. So the similarities there for sure. Sean was tough. He was the judge, jury, executioner. Like you said, like he really was sure about how he wanted to run his team and the discipline that he had, the consequences for such actions. Mike's approach to a head coach was different all the way around. Revolutionary. It was to me, never seen before. His style of coaching, his style of head coach, it was heavily player-led. A lot of decisions was by committee, a lot of communication, just offering up information on, all right, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, was new to me. Because Sean said, we doing two-a-days, we're just doing that.
Right.
Micah explained it to you and break it down to you. So it was different. I won't say that it was wrong or that it wasn't effective. It just was different. And that's his approach and that's his style. Like, he wanted to be able to revolutionize the head coaching position. That we know this position to be tough, stern, final say so. Mike wanted to be more community and collaborative. And we had success. We didn't go and ultimately go win the playoff games and go to the Super Bowl, but he did show that it can be effective when it's presented to the right group of guys and everyone's bought in and you got the health and durability. And you know what I mean? When things going right, it was smooth. It was smooth. And we had our tough stretches, our tough times. It was times that I honestly wanted Mike to do more as a disciplinary, put his foot down more, but he stayed true to like him. And this is how I'm the head coach. I got here being me and I'm going to stick to being me. And I love it. It's authentic. It's real. It's genuine. I respected it 1,000%.
Now, do you think that was effective, though, at the end of the day with the team, though? I mean, you think about it, you talk about Sean Payton gotten results. I talk about my guys, all got results. It seemed like at sometimes maybe guys might have taken advantage of it. I'm just on the outside looking in, but, you know, of course, I hear things as well, still being in the loop. But, man, it seemed like some guys, not yourself, but it seemed like some other guys might have taken advantage of that kindness.
Was it effective? Like I say, it was effective. We had our moments, man, where we looked like the best team in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he was coaching the same way at that time. Mm. And then we had our moments where we didn't look good at all. He was coaching the same way at that time. So, like I say, I appreciated the consistency of Mike. But we also have seen coaches that are super tough, super hard disciplinarians, and they don't win shit either. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, you know, you try to go in and chase that championship. Only one team get that done. And again, I say it was times where I'm like, man, Mike needs to go ahead and put that foot down, drop the hammer. And don't get me wrong, he had moments, man. He would address guys, he'd pull guys up to his office, he addressed guys in front of the team. Like, he had his moments for sure. But on a consistent basis, he was who he was and who he was from the start of his tenure.
Yeah, my grandfather always said, Big Seth, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah.
That's the saying. Yeah. That's the saying.
There's something about proof in the pudding and all that other stuff too, though. And this actually leads me into, I'm glad that Juice brought up the leadership conversation, and you really, you could tell he does this, Juice, because you kind of set me up for my next question here.
You teed it up perfectly.
Yeah. So, look, I work for Jason Taylor. I was blessed to work with guys like Juice, like Zach, like Sam and Pat, and so on and so forth. And again, we're older guys, so we saw it done a different way. And you know, you heard who the coaches were in those moments. I just feel like guys have told me that style of coaching can, in theory, work. And like you said, it worked at times, but as we all know, in any football season, even with the best teams, there are moments, right? There's always going to be kind of that the peaks and valleys. And what every guy has told me is that stuff can work if you have the right guys in the locker room. And some of the guys were the right guys. I would say, give me a Teron Armstead on any team I'm coaching, you know, like that. Correct. Absolutely. For and sure. You had some of those guys. Yeah, no doubt. But we felt, again, we're like on the outside with like our toe on the line kind of a thing, because we do still know people and what have you, and we hear things, and we also know what it looks like or what it should look like, having been around the league as long as we have. And it felt to us, or I'll just put my name on it, Juice, and you can co-sign if you want, but it felt to me.
See. We'll see if I'm going to co-sign or not.
I'm waiting
to see what you have to say first.
Some of the guys who were considered leaders may have been very talented players, may have been revered by their teammates because of their accomplishments in the league, but maybe weren't the guys that you needed or wanted. I'm not saying you, but just in general, leading a locker room. And that when you have the wrong guys who are also in a position of leadership or power, then things can implode at times. And that's what it felt like happened. And I've even went on the radio, Juice, you remember, I was like, look, I don't necessarily agree with the way Mike McDaniel's approach is, but ultimately I feel like he tried to do everything he could for his players, and that some of those guys let him down. So I'm not asking you to name names. I just want, you know, for somebody who was a part of those teams, if you feel that sometimes if the wrong guys are in a position to influence heavily, if that could lead to some of the troubles that the team ran into beyond injury.
Just in general, if you got the wrong people in leadership, you're not going too far.
Yeah.
That's in life. Everything. That's, you know, I mean, sports, politics, that's, you know, and business as well. But what I would say is, we let each other down. We failed the mission. We didn't get the job done as a team. And I was one of those leaders, captain, the last 8 years of my career. So during that time, we didn't do enough. We didn't get the job done. We didn't lead the right way. We didn't bring along enough people. The best teams I've been a part of, the best players are the leaders, are the captains. You know what I mean? So not a guy that just know how to talk and a guy that know how to rah-rah everybody, but the best players, ones that go out and produce, but also have the ability to reach back and bring guys along. So it's always optimal when you can have your top five players be your captains. Doesn't mean that they have to be. Not everyone is fit to be a captain, but also guys have to understand that people lead in different ways. I can lead by example. This guy can lead more vocally. He know how to talk and get through to guys differently. So at the end of it, Seth, we failed as a unit, as a team, as a collective, as a group of captains, as a regime. We didn't get the job done. We didn't win a playoff game for the city of Miami. We didn't go to the Super Bowl, which is the ultimate goal of why we played the game. So just as a whole, we didn't get the job done.
It makes sense to me, Big Seth. I mean, I like that. And that's a sign of a true leader right there.
I mean, that's a captain speaking.
That's why he's a captain leader right
that's
there.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, he's pointing, you know, it's all of us, damn it. I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. All right, Teron. We spent enough time talking about everybody else. You know what I mean? Let's talk about you a little bit. We talked about 12 seasons, 5 Pro Bowls, selected as an NFL top 100 player on multiple occasions. I mean, there's no doubt that when you're on the field, you're as good as anyone at that position. Not even a question. We love how athletic you were, especially being a big guy. Big guys that can move, man. That's always fun. Power you play with, and the footwork was always nice. If there was ever a question about T's dad, it wasn't about your play. It was whether, you can battle through whatever you're going through health-wise, man. And we know we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that you're still probably dealing with. You definitely fought through those injuries in Miami. But when you retire, we come to find out that prior to 2024, you're told you need a knee replacement surgery.
For sure.
Yeah. Talk about what you had to do to play on that knee, because man, you might not know my story, but I know what I went through with I had a foot injury, a toe injury that I had three surgeries on it that pretty much ended my career. So I'm telling you, that's a little bit of my backstory. And then, tell us about what you were going through there. And then tell us how you're feeling now. Have you had the procedure? Yep. I know you dropped a lot of weight. You look great right now. How are you feeling right now, my man?
Man, outside of this knee, I'm all good, man. I've lost like 45 pounds since I retired. So that's helped a lot.
Wow.
But my knee is a problem every day. Every day, man, is when I get out of this chair right now, I'm going to have to preheat this baby to walk into the front of the house. So it's a challenge. And when I got to that last season before the season started, and we had the conversation in the doctor's office, and it's like, it's nothing left to do. No injections, no surgery. You got to get this thing replaced, man. Wow. So I went home with that information and I made the decision. I want to go out on my terms. I want to go out how I want to go out. And I just stopped doing the treatment on it. I stopped rehabbing it as much as I, because it really wasn't nothing left. So I'm just working out. I didn't practice. In 2024, I probably touched the practice field three times that season outside of a walkthrough. And I really made the decision. Like, I'm going to go out the way that I want to go out. And everybody I play against, they got to deal with it. They're not going to know my situation. They're not going to see it on film. They're not going to be able to feel it while we're playing. And it's mental. And I really had so many reps at the mental part of the game because of my injury history. Juice, my career was supposed to be over at year three. Done. I didn't allow it. Mentally, I didn't allow it. Like, physically, I could have just walked away and workers comp this thing. But mentally, that wasn't it for me. That wasn't the end of my story. So all the surgeries, man, all the times that I'm just out there reinventing myself to be able to play and to play at a high level, tear something in this hand and to get surgery. So, all right, now I'm left hand. Now I got to be left hand dominant. I got to hit this guy. And at this exact spot, in order to have a chance to win his rep, now I'm dealing with this high ankle, but Nick Bosa's power is insane. So if I don't get on him first, he's going to kill me. So I jump set him every play. You know what I mean? So like really coming up with a plan, I had so many reps over the years in New Orleans and in Miami that by that last year, I could do it. I can go out and play without taking a snap, without taking an athletic step throughout the week. But it's just like how I wanted my story to be. I didn't want to be the one of those guys you see on films getting his ass whooped. Like,
right.
That ain't. I'm not doing it. I'm not going for it.
T-Stead, we were just talking about this on, I don't know what show, maybe last week, Big Seth, and people don't understand the amount of surgeries that we go through. You go through these surgeries, and people don't even know about it like you're talking about. But we're not talking about you having a little high ankle sprain or a pulled hamstring. We're talking about major shit that people don't understand, that guys go in and get taken care of, cleaned up, fixed, whatever it might be, all the time. I'm sitting on, I was talking about it last week. Yeah, it was last week. 11 surgeries. T-Stead, I mean, people don't even know how many times you've been under knife because we don't talk about it. You talked about the fact that you need a knee replaced, and you went out there without any practice, mental reps only, and still was able to have to maneuver around all these young dudes trying to come for you.
No question, man. No, people don't know, Juice. And it's not our job to share. We're not allowed to share because I never look for the built-in excuse. I just wanted to be able, can I play? That was it. Regardless of what I'm dealing with, can I play? I've played games with these surgery stitches still in me, still on my body. And I'm in the game with it wrapped up and wrapped up again, and I'm going. and get it treated for infection and all that after the game. Like, I've done it. So that my question was, can I go out and be effective? Can I help the team win?
They don't get it, boy. We don't just play games. This ain't no game to us, man. I'm telling you, man. They'd be like,
I had no idea until I started working. I was like, this is what guys go through. Like, we only see Sunday at 1 o'clock, but when you see what happens Sunday evening through until the next one, it's like, oh my God, it's pretty crazy. So we're going to talk left tackles really quickly. There's a guy here who Juice had the pleasure of playing with. I had the pleasure of working with a guy by the name of Richmond Webb. One hell of a left tackle, a guy that everybody in Dolphins Nation believes should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I want to ask you, one, did you watch any, whether it was before you got here or when once you got here, have you watched any of Richmond Webb's work on tape? I'm just curious if one Pro Bowl left tackle has watched another Dolphins great do that. And then the second thing is, what does a Hall of Fame left tackle look like to Terron Armstead?
Richmond Webb. I've seen him, man. And more so in my post career as I've been watching and studying, because I trained probably 20 NFL linemen now. So I go back and watch the greats and how they got it done. So Willie Rolfe has always been a mentor of mine. He's always been somebody really close to me. That's what a Hall of Fame left tackle look like. Richmond Webb, another. And I like to watch the different styles. Because while I play, I'm the athletic quick tackle. So I'm watching myself. I'm watching Trent Williams. I'm watching Jason Peters. I'm watching Dwayne Brown. Like, I'm watching guys that fit my style. But then we got a whole other style, Joe Thomas, Andrew Whitworth, the vertical guys. And then we got another style. We got Tyron Smith, the 45, the left-hand dominant style. So, you know what I mean? So I'm watching. I'm trying to take what I can take from these guys, but I also know who I am as a player. So I love to take a look at the guys that done it at a high, that did it at a high level for a long time and find out, all right, this is how they got it done and consistently got it done, so I can teach it back to the young guys that I'm training now.
I just saw Big Rolf the other day, man. I don't know how anybody ever got around him. That's why they didn't. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
You were definitely taking the long way.
They got to go the long route by the time the ball's way gone, for sure.
That's a big fella, for sure. All right, we know you got to get out of here. The final segment in every Fish Tank episode is the Fish Tank 2-Minute Drill. Okay, you've certainly had to be a part of a lot of 2-Minute Drills in your lifetime. So you got 2 minutes on the clock. If you need a timeout, but I think you're trying to get out of here, so you give damn them timeouts. And we'll throw a few questions at you, and we'll get you out of here. Sound good?
Let's do it.
All right, Juice, clock is running.
All right, here we go. We know you're a rapper. Hell, you have 5 songs featured on Madden 2024. That's badass right there. So we have to ask the question that all rappers have to, you know, you have to have an opinion on this. Biggie or Tupac?
Pac.
Wow, quick. Just like that. I didn't know because I thought T-Stead was a little bit more, you know, I guess he's kind of a Midwest guy. All right. So you are one of only 3 players in Miami Dolphins history to have played his college ball at, and he's wearing it right there on the shirt, at Arkansas Pine Bluff. Can you name the other 2?
That's in the league right now. We got Julian.
No. That played for the Dolphins. They're long, put it this way. They, you know, Juice and I crossed paths.
I played with them, T-Stead, and I didn't know the answer. So this is a tough one right here.
It is a tough one.
That's tough.
One of them is in the Arkansas Pine Bluff Hall of Fame with you, though.
LC Greenwood?
No. We would have liked to have LC Greenwood on the squad. I'll give you the answer. So because that's going to be tough. So one was a running back by the name of Ray Neely. He is Arkansas Pine Bluff Hall of Fame class of 2013. And Ray Neely, if you knew him, I think you would know that you had met him, because Ray, I bet to this day, could still run his damn mouth. But Ray was a lot of fun. And then we had a defensive tackle, a giant of a man by the name of Ernest Grant. He was here for a couple of years. We drafted Ernest. Okay. Nicest guy in the world. He was like 6'5".
Big Seth. Clock's running, Big Seth.
It's Arkansas Pine Bluff history, Juice. We got to pay respect.
I know you're giving it to him, man, but the clock is running. He didn't want a timeout.
I called a timeout. You got a question.
All right, T-Stan. One of the toughest guys I ever played with was Brian Cox. Brian was from East St. Louis, Illinois, which is less than 5 miles from where you grew up, your hometown of Cahokia.
Cahokia.
Who grew up in the toughest neighborhood, you or B. Cox?
It's actually all the same, really. Like, if I wanted to, I could walk to East St. Louis. So 5 miles, it kind of depend on where you are in, because they're both probably only 5 miles combined.
Mm, right.
You know what I mean? They're not.
That's like center to center, right? That's a...
yeah. Right. Probably so, from my center to Jackie Joyner Kersee Center. So, man, it's a rough place. Like Cahokia, East St. Louis, the Centerville, like those surrounding areas, it's a rough place.
That's what's up.
Well, Juice, he said you can walk.
Both of them, they're all tough, Big Seth.
He said it's all the same thing.
My hometown wasn't tough at all. Hey, we weren't tough.
You want to talk about not tough? He said you could walk from one to the other. I ain't walking from one to the other. I can tell you, unless he stands with me.
I'm not walking there either, bro.
Unless he stands with me. Final question here. Let's punch this thing in the end zone. You sit down at the spades table with three quarterbacks that you have protected, okay? So you're at the spades table. Drew Brees sits down. Skylar Thompson sits down. And, of course, Tua sits down at the spades table with you. I want to know which of those three you want as your partner, which is going to be the guy that's going to get accused of talking across the board, and then which guy is getting run right the hell off the table.
Ooh, I will go with Drew.
Drew's on you,
because
okay?
He'll be on party because we've been there, done that.
Okay,
right. We play. Tua and Skylar. So Tua will be talking across the – he's trying to give Skylar some tips, trying to tell him, you know what I mean, I got high space, so go low.
Right.
And Skylar might get ran off the table. Skylar, to his credit, on the court, though, Skylar got
game. He looks like he got game, yeah.
Wow. Too funny. Man. I like Tua's talking across the board. Skylar, we're going to – your boy, that ceiling's high up in here, isn't it? Yeah. That is the two-minute drill. He is Teron Armstead. Check him out at the set because he's absolutely killing it. And we're going to try and sneak in there on a Monday night and get in that chat, Juice. We need to.
That's right. Yeah, right. We're going to drop we're gonna come in. I'm coming as Big Seth. You're coming as Juice.
Okay.
Perfect. Right. Perfect. I appreciate
you. Hey, Teron, you man. Thanks for diving in, brother.
Of course. Thank you. Strictly for them true fans. Golf fans. Number one. Of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Never been that fish tank.